This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host. And we're very pleased to welcome David Maxwell, our guide on matters of the Korean Peninsula. David, the headline in the Financial Times in these last hours: South Korea raises military spending by most in more than 15 years. Subhead: the president of South Korea, Mr. Yi Jae-myung, vows to step up defense budget following U.S. pressure on Asian allies. Is this a surprise, David? What does it mean for the region and for relations with the U.S.? Good evening to you.
Good evening. No, I don't think it's a surprise at all. Traditionally, progressive governments have increased defense spending, I think mostly out of fear of being perceived as soft on defense. But really, we have to look at this in the broadest terms. And since 2004, in the beginning of the OPCON transition, it has been the mantra has been South Korea must develop independent warfighting capabilities. And so that is really the foundation for OPCON transition. President Lee has said he wants to have OPCON transition in his term. And he is also saying that, he wants to have a self-reliant defense, which is something that we have wanted. However, there are those that look at his demand for OPCON transition, his words on independent defense, as a potential fissure in the alliance as well. So it is really paradoxical. He has stated in his opening or his military day address yesterday in Korea, he said that deterrence with the United States is what works, but they must have a strong self-reliant defense. And so we should applaud having a strong self-reliant defense, but we should also continue to strengthen the alliance, because it is the presence of American troops that is the most important factor in deterring North Korea's conventional and nuclear attack.
Gordon, I have a question for David.
David, could you explain OPCON transfer?
Yes, it is the most misunderstood and erroneously talked about concept. And it's very complicated, but it's gone through a long process. For Korea, it's a sovereignty issue. They misunderstand and erroneously believe U.S. forces are Korean forces are under the control of the United States. That is patently false. No Korean forces are under the command of the United States. They are provided under the operational control of the ROC U.S. Combined Forces Command, which is commanded by a U.S. general, but that does not mean Korean forces are under the control of the United States. So the Koreans perceive that it is. It's a sovereignty issue, and it really goes back to 1994 when the terms of the alliance were renegotiated, because at that time, all Korean forces were under the operational control of the ROC U.S. Combined Forces Command. And so they had what was called the peacetime return of OPCON, or the return of peacetime OPCON, where the Korean forces were just like the American forces. And the fact that they were apportioned to the Combined Forces Command, but only provided for the operational control by CFC when the national governments decide to do that. Right now, both the ROC JCS and U.S. Forces Korea will provide ROC and U.S. forces to the Combined Forces Command when they determine it's necessary to do so. But the OPCON transition, and now it's called the return of wartime OPCON, it is an erroneous assumption that that U.S. forces or Korean forces will be under the operational control of South Korea. The only thing that is going to happen now, after multiple iterations of negotiations of OPCON transition, is that at some time in the future, when both countries decide, the commander of CFC will transition from a U.S. commander to a Korean commander. But there will be no change to the command relationship, and ROC and U.S. forces will remain under CFC, who will answer equally to both presidents, to both countries under the military committee. I'm sorry for a long explanation. It is complex and misunderstood by the general public, really in both Korea and the United States.
The AP article, South Korea's top diplomat says his nation has asked Trump to be a peacemaker, that's in quotes, with North Korea. What is that imagining, David?
Well, I imagine that South Korea would like the United States to engage with Kim Jong-un, to engage in talks to denuclearize or probably to shift to arms control to try to stop the development of North Korean nuclear weapons, further development, and that President Trump will use his legitimacy and reputation to try to bring peace and stability. And then for South Korea to open up communications, talks, exchanges, and a stabilization, and where both countries peacefully coexist. And South Korea is using peaceful coexistence. North Korea is calling South Korea the main enemy and says it no longer seeks peaceful unification. And so when we talk about peaceful coexistence, we fail to recognize the threat from North Korea, its existential threat to South Korea, and furthermore, we are really abandoning the 26 million Koreans in the North to continue to suffer under the worst human rights atrocities in the world. And so peaceful coexistence is not a concept that we really should strive for unless we want to continue to see the Koreans in the North to face abuse, torture, and certain death.
Gordon, I see the headlines pointing out that Kim has been invited to the grown-up table by Xi Jinping. Is that significant here, given remarks by the new president in Seoul?
I think that certainly it is significant. The relations between Beijing and Pyongyang, I believe, are closer than most people think. And every time the Chinese want something, really want something, Kim will comply. Although when Kim believes the Chinese don't really want something, he will be defiant. This has been a game that they've been playing for a very long time. But Kim does understand that the survival of his regime in North Korea depends on China's goodwill.
You have a question for David.
David, how would you characterize the relationship between Pyongyang and Beijing?
I think you summed it up very well. You really, you know, I think your key point is Kim Jong-un is masterful at playing, the powers off against each other. I think that the relationship between China and North Korea is strong, as you said. And of course, we know it's strong and growing between Putin and Kim. And I think when we look at China and Russia and the support it's providing to Kim Jong-un, it really has changed the dynamics from 2018 to 2019 because Kim Jong-un no longer needs sanctions relief, no longer needs the U.S., and really is surviving and in some ways thriving. The regime is thriving. The people are not, of course, but the regime is thriving with support from China, but from Russia in terms of technology, fuel, and and military support, while Kim Jong-un is renting his mercenary military, providing ammunition and arms to Putin's war in Ukraine. And so the conditions are much different than 2018 and 19. And Kim Jong-un does not need to normalize relations with the United States at this time.
To ensure peace and prosperity for the Republic of Korea, said the new president, we must not depend on anyone else but strengthen our own power. This in keeping with the ambition to grow the defense budget to 5% of GDP. What does this mean? How does this translate? Because he knows he's backed up by the United States. Where is he going with this? David?
Well, I think he's, you know, again, he wants an independent, strong military, which we should all support. Right. The South Korean defense industry is growing, and it has become a partner in the arsenal of democracies, supporting NATO countries, Romania, Estonia, Poland, and its defense industry is really filling shortfalls in many countries. And so an expanded military really provides the ability to continue to develop its own defense and defense articles. But those defense articles are important, important for the economy of South Korea and important for the mutual defense of like-minded democracies around the world.
David Maxwell, Vice President of the Center for Asia Peace Pacific Strategy, Gordon Chang.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.